The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com. Cori Bush calls out police and government repression of social movements. This article was written by Representative Cori Bush on May 14th. 10 years ago this August, a white police officer killed 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. What happened on Canfield Drive that day sparked a nationwide movement to save black lives, end police brutality, and make safety a reality for all people. As a registered nurse, pastor, and local activist, I spent over 400 days protesting alongside thousands of my fellow community members. I will never forget the brutality we faced in response to our calls for humanity. Police used tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets, noise munitions, batons, shields, fists, and boots against us. The Missouri National Guard called us enemy forces. Our government labeled us black identity extremists. Many politicians condemned us. Those of us on the front lines were traumatized, but we knew that time would prove we were on the right side of history. And it did. Time will prove the same for the students currently protesting across the country. From Columbia University in New York City, to Washington University in St. Louis, to the George Washington University in Washington, D.C., thousands of students, faculty, staff, alumni, and their allies of different faiths, ethnicities, and backgrounds have engaged in overwhelmingly nonviolent civil disobedience in support of Palestinian human rights, and an end to their university's complicity in violation of those rights. For years, politicians, university administrators, and media figures across the political spectrum have professed their commitment to free speech, diversity, and inclusion. They have feigned concern about the state of free speech and dissent on college campuses. Yet, when presented with organized, disciplined, nonviolent protest in support of a moral cause that is routinely stigmatized, many of those same people have championed violent, repressive crackdowns intended to crush dissent. We have all seen the footage of armed officers using pepper spray, rubber bullets, fists, and boots against students, faculty, and their allies without provocation. We have all witnessed the cowardly response from too many university administrators, some of whom would rather risk or inflict violence on their own community members than grapple with calls for divestment. We have all heard the stories of students arrested, assaulted, suspended, evicted, banned, smeared, humiliated. Despite knowing what happened nearby in 2014 and expressing support for the Ferguson protesters, Washington University administrators in St. Louis summoned dozens of law enforcement officers to a protest where students, faculty, and other community members were peacefully gathered. Some were brutalized. Officers were filmed beating and body slamming a 65-year-old professor of Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville, Steve Tamari, who was later hospitalized with multiple broken ribs and a broken hand. Steve is my friend, and I am thankful he's alive. I met him and his wife, Sandra, both Palestinian Americans, when they joined us in the streets during the Ferguson uprising. Protesters are now being smeared as violent and anti-Semitic. Let me be clear. Trespassing, setting up tents, and carrying signs are not violent. Condemning a government that has killed more than 14,500 children in 7 months and creating a humanitarian catastrophe is not anti-Semitic. Beating, tackling, pepper spraying, and shooting rubber bullets at people is violent. The January 6th insurrection was violent. Denying the humanity of the many Jewish people who are participating in the encampments is anti-Semitic. None of what protesters in Ferguson and at Columbia University have experienced is new. It's happened hundreds of times throughout our history. It happened in Boston in 1770 when protesters supported independence from British rule. It happened in Pennsylvania in 1897 when mine workers demanded labor rights. It happened in Virginia in 1917 when protesters demanded equal rights for women. It happened in Selma in 1965 when protesters demanded civil rights for black people. It happened in New York, Chicago, St. Louis, and elsewhere in 1968 when protesters demanded an end to the Vietnam War. And it happened in Washington, D.C., and in communities all across our country in 2020, when protesters demanded an end to police brutality. Behind every attempt to silence a protester is an idea that those in power don't want people to hear. Yet protest movements have been remarkably successful throughout our history. The women's suffrage movement led to the ratification of the 19th Amendment despite opposition from those in power. The same is true of the civil rights movement, which culminated in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the youth-led nationwide protests that led to the end of the Vietnam War and South African apartheid. Those lessons can be powerful. During the Ferguson protests, a group of Palestinians visited us and taught us how to protect ourselves against tear gas. That moment opened my eyes to the connection between state-sanctioned violence at home and abroad. I thought of that day when I first called for a ceasefire following the horrific October 7th attacks. I was labeled disgraceful and repugnant by the Biden administration, but that didn't stop me from introducing the Ceasefire Now resolution on October 16, 2023, which has served as a mobilization tool inside and outside of Congress. Our anti-war movement has helped pressure the Biden administration to call for a ceasefire after providing military funding and political cover that contributed to the killing of tens of thousands of Palestinians. It's time our government responded to popular social movements with an ear instead of a boot. It's time our leaders focused on investing in community-led safety through violence interruption, mental health crisis response, and summer jobs programs, among others, instead of endless war. And it's time our president heeded the lessons of the past, including the anti-war and anti-apartheid protests he has lived through, instead of destroying the coalition that elected him and willfully clearing a path for a Donald Trump victory in November, an outcome no elected Democrat, including me, wants to see happen. We are indeed in a battle for the soul of the nation. These students represent the best of that soul. I stand with them. Editor's note: Washington University in St. Louis put out a statement saying that they called police after the groups words and actions made it clear that they did not have good intentions on our campus and that this demonstration had the potential to get out of control and become dangerous. The school acknowledged arresting 100 individuals who refused to leave after being asked multiple times. Teen Vogue reached out to the university police department for comment. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com, How to Navigate a Friendship Breakup, a Guide on Repairing or Recovering from Fallouts. This article was written by Gia Han Tu Tran on May 18th. Friendships are unique bonds that make our lives more exciting by allowing us to share moments that matter with people who care about us and are there for us when we need them the most. However, at other times, friendships can pose challenges that can end in a lack of understanding, disagreements, and even separation. A breakup with a friend or even a group of friends can be emotionally stressful and needs precise navigation to be healthy. In this article, we will cover ways of dealing with hurt feelings, negotiating stressful decisions, asking ourselves if the friendship is repairable, and most importantly, recovering in case the repair is not. Getting over the initial shock. The aftermath of a breakup is undoubtedly devastating, and coming to terms with the situation is often overwhelming. Overall, the first step in coping is to let go of the pain you have been bottling up. When emotions are released, they are not limited to existing in a fixed time schedule, and consequently, can take up a lot of time to be properly processed and understood. Emotions such as grief, anger, and disappointment are all part of the healing process and are completely normal to feel in such a period of your life. Keeping a journal is one way to express such feelings. The process of writing down personal struggles or especially hard-to-swallow thoughts can have a therapeutic effect. Sharing your feelings with someone you care about is another beneficial way to stay healthy. This can be someone close to you, such as a family member or another friend, to whom you can open up and process what you are going through. Through open discussions like those, you can discover new perspectives on the matter as well as seek comfort. Understand the cause. It's important to understand the reason for the fallout, as it can assist in the recovery process. Taking time to consider the reasons that ultimately led to the separation can serve to better understand why the friendship ended to begin with. Was it one of the problems during a conflict which was never able to be completely resolved? Was the breakup between you and your friend the result of a series of events, or did it just happen suddenly in one day? Knowing one of the possible reasons could help you determine what steps to take to avoid this from happening again in the future. Adding to that, it wouldn't be wrong to consider both sides of the story. It is normal to feel like the victim and feel justifiably angry. But understanding your role can make you see the good in the current situation. Reflection and personal responsibility will help understand why the friendship couldn't possibly go on. Healing the wounds. A complete healing process that needs to take place after a fallout with a close friend involves a lot of emotional and mental skills. Self-care becomes particularly important during this part. Engage in all sorts of activities that bring you joy and relaxation. For example, reading, exercising, meditating, or spending time with other friends. Taking care of your physical health can also have a positive impact on your emotional well-being. Another thing that may be needed in the healing process is the use of boundaries. If you have endured some bad behavior from your friend, walking away may provide some much-needed distance. This process is not about finding a compromise that keeps them pleased and comfortable, but it should finally give you room to heal at your own pace without a toxic environment surrounding you. Forgiveness is also a powerful and important step to create the way for healing. Holding grudges and being angry doesn't mean you shouldn't forgive, but it means you can let go of bad feelings and move on. Reconciliation or letting go. After some time has passed and the first wounds have begun to heal, you may find yourself at a crossroads. Should you just try to rebuild the friendship, or should you just accept your efforts of moving on during the difficult times? This decision depends on the depth of the fallout, how well both sides can repair it, or how much effort they are willing to put in, and how hard it could be to resolve the issues that caused the rift in the first place. If you choose to rebuild a broken friendship, be willing to listen and even change. Communication is very important in this case. You need to talk openly and respectfully about what happened and what each side needs to be able to rebuild the relationship. Knowing what to expect and that it might not ever go back to the old relationship is a good start. Over time, a new kind of relationship can replace the old one. On the other hand, if a friend has been behaving poorly during the fallout, or if rebuilding and resolving issues seems impossible, the best solution is to break off the friend for good. Of course, this is not easy, but it is an important step in moving forward. Grieving the friendship that you once had is the only way in this scenario, but in time, you will find new relationships and friendships that happen to bring you more joy. Moving forward. Trying to start a new chapter in life after losing a close friendship is hard, but it could possibly lead to something better. It's time to focus on yourself and expand your horizons. Think of yourself as having matured from the experience in addition to the lessons you have learned from this fallout and how you can apply those lessons in your next friendships. You can make new friends or even work to strengthen existing ones as part of recovery. Attend social events. Sign up for student organizations that share your interests and hobbies, and be prepared to interact with other personalities out of your comfort zone. In addition, by paying attention to your goals and passions, you have a way to discover what is truly important to you. Whether it is your professional skills, your hobbies, or your personal development, channeling your energy into positive goals will, quite reasonably, bring you success in life. The next part. Leaving a significant friend is certainly a difficult event in one's life, but it can also turn into something that brings blessings and benefits. Getting over the initial shock, realizing the reason behind it, overcoming this unpleasant feeling, and making a decision to either move on or resume the friendship with them can help you get through this stressful situation. The next part involves accepting possibilities and opportunities and forming new personal relationships that will eventually lead to a happier life. A lost friendship may find a path to new and even more meaningful people and possibly even stronger friendships. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Why are people blocking celebrities? This article was written by Arisha Ahmed on May 14th. Less than a week ago, TikTok user Hailey Bailey posted a video gleefully welcoming her 10 million family members. And yet, only days later, Haley's following count has fallen back to the 9 million. The reason for this? A TikTok Haley posted of herself on the day of the Met Gala, dressed in an ornate dress accompanied by the popular TikTok sound, "Let them eat cake." The phrase stems from Marie Antoinette, the last queen of France, allegedly uttered the infamous words when told that her subjects were starving. Although this rumor has been disproved by historians, the phrase has stuck around. For many, it symbolizes the elite's ignorance when it comes to the suffering of the masses, a fact that Haley, ironically, appeared oblivious to. Unsurprisingly, she received immediate backlash for her TikTok. Haley has since released an 8-minute video explaining that she didn't actually attend the gala, only the pre-Met interviews. Haley also justified her silence on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza by asserting that she is simply not informed enough to talk about it in a meaningful and educational way. While some users accepted her apology, "People are totally overreacting," reassures one commenter. Others were not so easily taken in. "Watching from District 12, where I just chose between paying my bills and buying food," comments one sarcastic user, while another writes, "What a privilege to not have to think too hard about anything." Haley isn't the only celebrity people are perceiving as out of touch. At the Met Gala, Camila Cabello carried a 22.5K purse made from ice. Emma Chamberlain's dress took 600 hours to assemble. Alia Bhatt's sari required a team of 163 people to construct. Meanwhile, war and violence rage in places such as Gaza, Sudan, and Congo. How does blocking celebrities tie in? For many, the contrast between celebrities and the suffering is simply too staggering. So, when TikTok user Blockout2024 posted a video encouraging people to block celebrities on social media so they don't earn ad revenue from you, people jumped on the idea. All of a sudden, celebrities, ranging from Kim Kardashian to Chris Rock, are finding themselves blocked by thousands of users. The same TikTok user who encouraged people to begin blocking celebrities posts Celebrities Block of the Day, where he suggests a handful of celebrities for people to block. The main criteria appear to be those who have not spoken up about the devastation unfolding in Gaza. TikTok, Instagram, and X alike are filled with posts about celebrity blocking. One TikTok user posted a video accompanied by the caption, "Let them eat cake is what I say, as I block every celebrity not using their platform for good because I'm not paying for their lifestyle while the world burns." The video has attained over 80,000 likes. Other users are posting spreadsheets filled with the names of celebrities they've blocked so far. Comments are filled with suggestions of who else to block and ways to heighten the effectiveness of the blocking, such as also boycotting the celebrities' brands. Is celebrity blocking having an effect? It's easy to regard the sudden surge of people blocking celebrities as nothing more than a trend, but the blocking does appear to be having an effect. American rapper and singer Lizzo has up until now been silent on the crisis occurring in Gaza. However, after finding herself on several people's block lists, Lizzo suddenly posted a TikTok video advocating GoFundMe pages for a family in Gaza and Sudan, as well as an organization to help people in Congo. In the video, Lizzo announces that she has donated and encourages her viewers to likewise donate if they feel so compelled. Project Olive Branch is an initiative where people select a family in Gaza and advocate their GoFundMe pages to help raise enough money to leave Palestine. Public figures who have been largely silent on Gaza, such as Chris Olsen and Hank Green, have in recent days posted videos getting involved in Project Olive Branch after heavy pressure from fans. However, although the blocking is affecting some B-list and C-list celebrities, its impact on A-listers is yet to be determined. Kim Kardashian is rumored to have lost 3 million followers due to the blocking, but has yet to publicly show sympathy or offer help towards the crisis in Gaza. Additionally, some argue that blocking celebrities online is nothing more than performative activism. Twitter user BlytheWife says it 100% is performative activism, and even if people claim that it demonetizes or weakens their platform, that isn't what we should be gathering and putting our energy into. Blocking famous people is a simple action that makes people feel like they're contributing to a cause without having to do too much. What's next? It's always difficult to predict where online movements will go. While it's possible that the trend of blocking celebrities will fizzle out by next month, it's also possible that it will continue to grow, which is exactly what it seems to be doing right now. People are turning their backs not only on celebrities who they dislike, but also on those who they're fans of. One TikTok user posted a video announcing that, "If I, a Swiftie of 6 years, can block Taylor Swift, so can you." After posting a video declaring that, "I thought people were just being dramatic about the blockout, but seeing Zendaya, especially, and Taylor Swift getting blocked, even by Swifties, is confirmation on how real people are actually taking this." Her video has over 50,000 likes. For the most part, people aren't blocking celebrities based on hatred. They're targeting with purpose. Anyone perceived as complicit in the crisis in Gaza due to their silence is getting blocked. While it's uncertain where this new-sprung movement of blocking celebrities will head, for now, one thing is certain. People are no longer willing to sit by and watch the elite eat cake while ignoring the struggles that everyday people face worldwide. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.